Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio with your host, Jody Johnston Powell, licensed social worker, certified family life educator, second generation parent educator, and author of the award-winning book, The Parents Tool Shop, The Universal Blueprint for Building a Healthy Family. For over 25 years, Jody has been training parents and family service professionals nationwide and serving as a parenting expert to the media worldwide. Now, through the Parents Tool Talk radio show and teleseminar series, Jody shares her practical advice and introduces you to other experts who can give you proven effective advice on the issues that matter most to parents. So get ready to be informed, entertained, and enlightened as we join Jody now.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Once again, welcome to Parents Tool Talk, the radio show and podcast of Jody Powell and Parents Tool Shop Consulting. My name is Chris Gooley. I am Jody Powell's producer. And today on the show, we are doing something special. We are going to re-air the pilot episode of Parents Tool Talk Radio. Now, at the beginning of our venture into internet radio, we set up this show as a private event participated in by Jody, myself, and members of Jody's business team, also known as the Dream Team. Now, since then, a lot has changed, and the biggest difference between this show and all the ones that have come after is that on this one, Jody was the guest. Now, since she was the guest, someone had to be the host, and, well, that was me. And truth was, I didn't need a lot of questions. I'd give Jody an inch, and she'd take a mile, but in a good way. And the conversation that ensued was definitely an interesting one. We got to hear a bit about how Jody grew up, what got her into the business that she's in, and certainly how she developed the Parents Tool Shop and the Universal Blueprint for Effective Parenting. And I'm very glad to have the chance to share all of that with you today. This is a great hour of material, and I thank you for listening. Now, the show is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking live calls today. However, you are welcome to join me in the chat room or just sit back and relax. I won't be interrupting much because we have about 55 minutes of material. And the pre-recording has its own ending, so that once the recording is over, the show is over. So just sit back, enjoy, and thanks for listening. Thanks to everyone for joining us today. We have with us, of course, the lady who will, in future episodes, be the host of this show. Jody, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing fine. Nice to have
Good.
You on the show.
Yes, thank you.
So, and actually, we are going to be doing things a bit differently this time. I am actually Jody's assistant, but I will be playing host today. In future episodes, Jody will be the host, and I will be playing the producer role to the best of my ability. So the idea that we had for this show being our pilot episode is that we wanted to find out a little bit about Jody, actually, a little bit about the business. And hopefully in the second half hour of the program, we'll open up for a little bit of Q&A. And to that end, I've got a couple of questions prepared. Jody, do you want to open up with a statement, or do you want to just jump into some questions?
Well, I'm not sure what your questions are, so I guess we can just dive in.
Okay. Well, for starters, you are president and CEO of Parents Tool Shop Consulting. And how long has this is your personal business, correct?
It is.
And how long have you had this business?
I believe it was around 1996 that I started the business. And that's all kind of a part of the story of how Parents Tool Shop began, because I really started it just because I was in a nonprofit job where I was under a grant contract to develop a parenting. Actually, it was just to develop a prevention program. And I made
that program
on my own time because it was a part-time position. And so I part of the story on how Tool Shop on my own time after hours, tested it out through those classes. And they were so popular that I got so many requests that I couldn't handle it through my part-time job. But I didn't want to say no and turn people down, so my agency gave me permission to start my own private consulting business and do that on the side. And we were just clear about, you know, which gigs would be through them and which would be through my private consulting business. So that was really the context in which the business and actually the book came to be, is that it was really just for the demand, for me to meet the demand for all these different kinds of classes that I was being asked to do.
Okay. Well, can you tell us a little bit about the content that you were teaching in those classes, and I'm guessing that's what eventually became the Parents Tool Shop book, correct?
Yeah. But before I even got into that job, there's during the time, it kind of goes back into more of a historical issue to see where that comes from, because both of my parents were parent educators while I was growing up. I'm only aware of three other people in the world who are second generation parent educators. So while I was growing up, my parents were teaching parenting classes, and then when I went to college and came out and was working as a social worker, and people knew that I had that background, they started tapping me to do parenting classes. Because this was back in the early 80s, and there still really wasn't much available at that time. So I started doing parenting classes somewhat through my job as a caseworker, but not so much there. It was more when I quit my job and was a stay-at-home mom. In the evenings, I was getting asked through the stay-at-home mom organization that I had started to do parenting classes, and I opened those up to the community. And at that point, I was teaching the two curriculum that my parents taught, which was PET, Parent Effectiveness Training, and STEP, Systematic Training for Effective Parenting. And there were a few other books out at that point. This was around 86. And Faber and Maslisch with How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk, Active Parenting by Michael Popkin, and there were a couple of new ones, Jay Nelson with Positive Parenting, and also Barbara Coloroso with Kids Are Worth It. And so that's about six or seven different curriculum, and each one of them had valuable stuff. There was a lot of crossover and duplication, but each one of them had something a little bit different. So when I first started teaching parenting classes, I was asking parents to buy two or three different books, and I'd ask them to read a chapter out of this and a chapter out of that. And then I started pulling together, just for the purpose of giving the reading assignments, started piecing together the best order to read things and all of that. That was the beginning of the Universal Blueprint, because I first realized that it was important for parents to learn the skills in a certain order. Because, for example, all the parents wanted to talk about discipline the first night, but there was a lot of foundational information that if they didn't get that right, their discipline wouldn't work. They wouldn't get the same kind of results. So I really started realizing that. So I started teaching it in a particular order, but there were still all these different books. So I had gotten down what was the best order to learn it, and when I got this grant contract with Catholic Social Services to coordinate a prevention program, that was when I started. They told me that they had no money for books, but that I could make handouts and make unlimited copies. So that was when I really started taking all the good information that was in these different chapters from these different books and pulling them together, piecing them together in an order. Plus, as long as I was doing those resources, I had all these articles that I had been, you know, if we were talking about bedtime, I had a bedtime article or whatever. So I really started pulling together all these literally hundreds of resources. And over those first couple of years, all I gave the parents were handouts, where I had copied and, you know, actually it wasn't copying and pasting back then. I don't know that I had much more than a very basic word processor, but everything was cited. You know, here's where I got this information, here's where I got that information. And if you look at the Parents Tool Shop, even today, every single chapter at the end of it has citations for where I got the information. So I literally was pulling together hundreds of resources into one and putting them within this structural format of the best order to learn it.
Well, what you said about before we continue on, what you said about having your students buy, you know, five or four, maybe three, four or five books, it reminds me of history class in college. It's like,
yeah,
you know, you buy 10 books and, okay, we'll read a chapter out of this one. And come end of the semester, oops, we never got to that one. Guess you didn't have to buy it. And we're like,
yeah,
thanks, professor.
Right. There was a lot of duplicate information. That one of the things, and this is still even till today, PET and stuff, those came out like 60s, 70s, and here we are to almost up to 2010. So that's 40 to 50 years or so, depending on which of those you're looking at. The information in those programs was pioneer information, universal information. And we now have 40 to 50 years of scientific research that proves those techniques have really stood the test of time. So there is a lot of information out there within parenting that's duplicate. In other words, it's becoming clearer at this point that parenting is not a matter of opinion. It really is a matter of scientific research. As long as you're a human being, there are some principles of human behavior that apply. Obviously, there's going to be opinions. You know, all of us have the same goals in terms of parenting, but we're going to have different opinions about what's the best way to accomplish that goal. And what parents today have that we didn't have, you know, a whole lot of even back in the 60s and 70s when my parents were raising me, was research that really proved that this is what would work. And now we do. So all those resources, you know, come fast forward to today, and there's literally thousands of parenting resources out there. And the ones that are based on evidence and research will all say very similar things. It's just how they say it or how they present it. Or for me, on my Parents Tool Shop is the only resource that offers an actual problem-solving system, question and answer, that you ask yourself to figure out which of these great techniques do I want to use for this particular problem. So that's the unique piece that Parents Tool Shop offers. But I can't say that the advice or the techniques in there are anything unique to Parents Tool Shop, because they're those universal, proven, effective parenting principles that not everybody knows about, and except for those of us who do research-based parenting.
And these new techniques that are outlined in your book, or we won't call them new, we'll just call them these techniques that are, as you say, based on 40, 50 years of research, they definitely take a different path, a different approach to parenting, actually, than a lot of the common wisdom that we and our parents and our grandparents might have grown up with. Things like, you know, kids should be seen and not heard, and, you know, kids are not little people, they're kids. At least that's the way it seems to me as I look at the principles. Would you say that's pretty accurate, that this takes a different approach to it?
I definitely would. I think historically parenting has been what I call the roasting pan approach. And the roasting pan approach is a story, and some of you, you know, some of our listeners have probably heard this, but the story, the short version of the story goes that I'm fixing dinner, and my mother tells me to cut off the ends of the roast before I put it in the pan. I said, well, why would you do that? That's the best part of the roast. She says, I don't know, that's just the way my mother always did it. Well, grandma's sitting out in the living room, so I go and ask her, and she says, I don't know, that's just the way my mom did it. And great-grandma sitting over there in the rocker with her cane, and I said, great-grandma, why did you cut off the ends of the roast? And she said, oh, honey, that was just the only roasting pan that I had.
it was kind of passed down. And it,
exactly.
Not necessarily a great scientific reason behind it or a ethical reason behind it. It was just maybe a practical reason, like great-grandma not having a pan big enough without cutting the ends off the roast.
Exactly. And I've done quite a bit of research into cultural-specific parenting, and it's really fascinating when you look at some of the cultural basis for some of the, you know, there are cultural differences in parenting if you look at different cultural groups. And, of course, culture is a choice. It's a choice to follow beliefs that were passed down. So we don't want to overgeneralize and say everybody in a particular cultural group would parent a certain way. But oftentimes, because of this roasting pan approach of just passing down, well, that's just how we've always done it, and, you know, it seemed to work for us for a particular reason, so we just keep doing it, or it doesn't seem to be doing any harm, so we keep doing it. Might not be the most effective, but that's just the way we've always done it. And so when we actually look at some of those original reasons why a particular practice came into being, that reason is no longer there. Just as me, as I'm fixing that roast in that kitchen at that moment, I have a pan that's big enough for that roast, and I don't have to cut off the ends anymore. So it really very much, a lot of parenting is not necessarily common sense. A lot of common parenting isn't necessarily scientifically sound. And it's really not rocket science. I mean, it really is really very basic and very simple. But a lot of times it's parents have just not necessarily had it presented to them in a way that they can see it in a different light and go, oh yeah, that makes total sense. I totally get it. Yeah, I can work with that. And so that's, I think, what parenting programs should be, and the good ones are, not telling parents how they should raise their kids or that you have to do it a certain way or certainly mandating anything. It's simply a matter of helping to educate parents about their options, because really there's no one right way to parent, but there are definitely more effective and less effective ways. So if we can help parents recognize these are your choices, and here's the outcomes you're going to get with those different choices, it's still up to them if they want to continue to parent the way that they have after being aware that it's ineffective. But then that's a conscious choice they're making. And that's our role, is to just help educate and help parents be aware so they're consciously choosing what they're doing as parents and not just blindly following some handed down and outdated kind of parenting practice.
So you're using the phrase effective parenting quite a bit, and also as I look at your book, The Parents Tool Shop, the subtitle is The Universal Blueprint for Building a Healthy Family. So Jody, could you just give us an example of what you would consider an effective parenting technique, and I'll let you pick the scenario, and what would you consider an ineffective or just a less effective technique?
Oh, sure. Probably the most common one, and it's my favorite technique to teach because parents get such immediate results. It's really common if a kid is running in the house to say, don't, or running down the street to say, don't run or you're going to fall. And we all know as soon as you say, don't run, you're going to fall, what happens?
They run.
They run and they fall. And the parent goes, I just were exasperated and frustrated. And why did you do that? I told you not to do it. And what I help parents recognize is two things. Number one is that children and the mind in general, not just in children, but the brain operates in pictures. So if I say to you, don't think of a purple elephant, what do you think of?
Purple elephant.
A purple elephant pops into your mind.
I'm thinking of it right now.
Yeah. So when I say, don't spill your milk, they think about spilling their milk. When you say, don't run, they hear run. When you say, don't hit your sister, they hear hit your sister. That's the picture that's created in their minds. And we know from athletes, we just got through with the Olympics, you see the athletes closing their eyes and imagining something. They don't imagine themselves not doing something. They imagine themselves succeeding in what they want to do, because if the mind can see it, it's more likely to do it. So when we say to kids, don't do this, we create the picture in their mind of what not to do. And so they're actually more likely to keep doing what we don't want them to do. And so the very simple technique is to tell kids what you want them to do. So instead of don't run, you tell them to walk.
Uh-huh.
Instead of don't spill your milk, keep the milk in your glass. Instead of don't hit your sister, play nicely with your sister. And if they don't know what nice means, then you teach them. And it's just a very, very small tweak in language, but the results the parents get are phenomenal. I literally could fill a 100-page book just with the stories of that one technique and the testimonials, miraculous testimonials I've gotten from parents of problems they've been dealing with for years. And they use that one technique one time, and that's it. They stop doing it, and they do what they were told to do.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great.
It really is.
I know that one of our callers, Jody, Donna, she only has a limited amount of time that she can be here. So, Donna, I'd like to go ahead and start the Q&A a bit earlier than we planned on, just in case you have any questions that you would like to ask Jody while we're on the air.
Well, there is one, Jody, in terms of parenting. What you're talking about sounds like, you know, basically young children. How late is too late to start implementing some of these techniques?
It is never, ever too late. And one of the stories that I share is in the introduction of my book, and this is really where I, from my heart, 100% can tell you it is never too late, and that is because of the story of my brother and my personal family, and it's a little bit too long of a story maybe to share on the radio show, but to make a long story very short is that my parents originally took the parenting program that they took because my brother, who was 5 years older than me, was really having some severe problems. And unfortunately, he had experienced a very traumatic event. Eventually, with this being in the 60s, he got very involved with and addicted to drugs, which then created a chemical balance that resulted in a very severe mental illness. So throughout the whole time I was being raised and my parents were using these skills on me, and as an untraumatized, typical child, they were getting lots of results and seeing how well they worked. They were making progress with my brother, but there was a limit to how much progress they could get because they didn't know what the cause of his behavior was. And that's one of the critical factors. That's one of the concepts within parenting is that you can keep trying to stop a behavior, but if you don't know what the cause of it is, you're not going to get the same results. But if you can figure out what the cause of the behavior is and resolve that cause, then it eliminates the behavior. It's kind of like you can keep putting Band-Aids on something, but if you cure the cause, then you know it just completely goes away. So with my parents, my brother was probably 25 before he finally told what had happened to him at age 9, that it started that whole spiraled progression and started to heal up and started to get megavitamin therapy, started to get and actually recovered from his mental illness. During that time, my parents had to completely reteach him everything, from how to socialize to all kinds of things, mostly having to do with socializing with other people and communicating and that kind of thing. And so to start at 25 with somebody who has a diagnosed mental illness that the experts, quote experts, told my parents was so bad that they should institutionalize him and throw away the key because he would never be a functional member of society. And my parents refused to believe that and refused to give up and continued to use these skills. And starting at the age of 25, worked with him. Now, it took 25 years for him to get that bad, but it only took maybe 5 to 8 years for him to not only be almost completely healed through the vitamins and all of that of his mental illness, but he also went back to school. He got a college degree. He eventually got a master's degree in pastoral counseling. He went to work at my mother's Christian Counseling Center, counseling other victims of molestation and sexual abuse, and also drug addiction. And so by the time he was 40, he was in a career, he was really kind of functioning like just about everybody else, got married. And so that is why I have seen a situation that was so hopeless that all the experts were saying give up, and I've seen dedicated, skillful parents use these techniques and get results. And I see it's not just my parents. I see it every day in the parents that I teach in my classes. They have teenagers and young adults who are dealing with very serious issues. It is different when it's a young adult versus a child who's under 18 in your own home. There are definite differences, but the quick answer is it is absolutely never too late to make some progress.
Oh, it's very inspiring. Thank you.
Excellent question.
That's why it's our family's dirty laundry, but I'll tell you, I share it because I do want people to feel hope, and I do want them to feel inspired to stick with it because it's tough.
That's definitely a very hopeful story.
Yeah, when you say that, because I think a lot of times we feel like our children have already headed down a path of self-sabotage, and once they hit a certain point in adulthood, it's too late to try to remedy any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So hearing that is very inspiring.
Yeah. And ultimately with our adult children, it is still their choice whether or not, however you're wanting to influence, whether or not they allow that to influence them. You know, they could decide to just throw all that away. However, the techniques that we use and learn help open up those lines of communication so that it's not this resistant kind of parent-child relationship, but that it really improves and enhances the relationship to the point that whatever influence is possible, whatever assistance, help, guidance, love can get through, it gives you your best chance. But with adult children, there's always that other factor, which is their free will and their choice.
Yeah.
And that can be the frustrating part if they're making poor choices and you really can't stop it.
Mm.
And maybe that's part of it too, is part of the skill set is to understand that fact as well.
Yes. And to know, in the parenting classes that I do, I generally do them, and I say ages 1 through 18, but the very last chapter is we take everything that we've learned about how to use this with kids, quote kids, even teenagers, and I show folks how you take all the exact same concepts, with the exception of discipline is the only thing that's different when it's an adult-to-adult relationship, and how you can use all those communication skills, all the problem-solving skills in adult relationships or with adult children. And there's really only, you know, slight variations in what you do. And most of it, like I said, has to do with discipline. I don't discipline my husband. You know, unless you're in a superior-inferior relationship, it would be more deciding what you're going to do. And there's just a couple of extra suggestions in that chapter for that. So it truly is lifelong through all your relationships, adults and children, improving all of your relationships. I've had many people say they take the parenting class and they'll come back and they'll say, you know, I'm using this at work and it's improving the relationships within my employees or among my coworkers and my team, or this is improving my marriage. And so the intent is all those possibilities are there. And I do workshops on the business tool shop and the couple tool shop. And so I do some specialized programming on that, but it is all possible.
Thank you so much again, Donna, for the question. At this point, you can ask another question, or if you need to take off, feel free to take off.
Okay. Well, actually, I'm a fountain of questions in terms of parenting. And from what you have said, Jody, these techniques are helpful in other relationships, and you mentioned other possibilities. But hearkening back to the situation, you know, with your brother and dealing with mental illness, there's so much in the way of, it seems, a lot of diagnosis lately of things like autism, ADD, many challenging kinds of situations. And do your techniques address any of those areas of special needs children, and are they effective with those children as well?
And the answer is yes and yes. Chapter 11, where we talk about unintentional problem behavior, one of the reasons for unintentional problem behavior, it's problem behavior that's unintentional because one of the reasons is that there's a medical condition that influences the child's behavior. And here's the thing about when you have special needs kids. Now, does the book specifically go into special techniques for autism and some of those? The answer would be no. I do have one section in there on ADHD, and it's really about You almost could make it any diagnosis, not just ADHD, but it's really like helping parents become informed consumers. If a teacher says, oh, your kid has ADHD and you should put him on medication, for them to be aware, a teacher can't tell you that. A teacher can't diagnose that. Here's what you want to look at first. If you want to get a diagnosis, here's the team members you need to involve. Here's what it looks like. I actually give the diagnosis criteria for that particular disorder so the parents can kind of self-look at their child and see, oh, let's see, this is a 4-year-old boy, and, oh, you can't diagnose ADHD until age 6, plus most boys are high energy. No, maybe he really doesn't need, you know, any kind of medication or diagnosis. So it's just helping parents become informed consumers. In terms of what the universal approach is, when kids have a medical issue that affects their behavior, here's the thing. All of these universal, the big question those parents have is, when I see this behavior that's a problem for me, how do I know if that behavior is a result of the medical condition or that's a behavior that if I were maybe doing something different, maybe I would be able to change and make an okay behavior? And that very question is where Parents Tool Shop comes in, because when you use all the tools in the system in the order that we have presented that, you're using the most effective tool in the most effective way long enough to get results in the right order, your beliefs are all there, you will get results unless there is a deeper issue that has not been resolved. So what parents get when they have kids with those special needs is they definitely get improvement in all the areas of that child's life and behavior that are possible for the parent to improve through their responses. And what's left is what is a direct result of the medical condition. And for those behaviors and for that condition, they would need to see an expert in that area to either diagnose it, to treat it, or for maybe some additional techniques or tactics that might particularly work well for those kinds of disorders.
Okay, thank you. I've got one more.
Sure,
okay, let her ask it before she has to go.
Sure, go ahead. You know, one thing is that I'm just so willing to and welcoming to Donna asking questions and anybody else asking questions because, truth be told, I'm not a parent myself. And so sometimes all I can say after a great story that Jody tells is, wow, or hey, that's cool, or something like that. But Donna, it sounds like you are a parent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Parent and grandparent, actually. So I've been looking down the generational lines and looking at my grandchildren and how, you know, I would interact with them as well. Mm-hmm. In terms of changing, you know, one of the things that I find that's a difficult thing to overcome when you have particularly older children or, you know, a couple are doing well and another one is not doing so well and it seems like you're applying the same things to across the board to the family members and they're being effective in some situations but not in others. And maybe you answered that question in terms of medical condition. But another thing is we tend to get into these kind of tapes almost where, okay, here comes that situation again and you can see it playing out before it even starts. Do you have any, I don't know, handy-dandy ways of helping us as parents to clip that tape.
Absolutely. And the key to it, number one, is being aware of it. I call it the dance. It's like you kind of have a dance that you that everybody has their role in this dance. And when it starts to come up, everybody kind of just blindly just kind of steps into the role and does it again. And you're not happy with the dance. You know, people are stepping on each other's toes or getting hurt. And but yet that's the dance you've always done. And sometimes people don't even think about what they're doing. So the number one thing is to be aware of what we are doing, not only our thoughts, but our words and our actions, to be aware of that and to realize that we have a choice. So some people, their level of change is they're not even aware of what they're doing or that there's another way to do it. Then there's some people that don't like what's happening and they want to change it, but they don't know what their options are. And that's where Parents Tool Shop really can help in terms of here's your other options for what you can do and here's the possible outcomes that you might get. There's a universal approach, but at each of those steps, you have lots of choice so that you can choose based on the individual situation what would work in that situation with your child and your values and your rules and all that. You can make it very much your own response. And so basically what you can do is that you can kind of rewrite this dance. Even if the only steps that you change are your own, it's the concept is a pebble in a pond. Anytime one person in a family system changes, the whole system has to adjust to that person changing. So we don't go out and try to change our kids or change our spouse or change anybody else. We work on ourselves, and by us changing and improving and making different choices, and we become different and we become more empowered and confident and capable, those around us have to adjust to the fact that we're not dancing the same. And so they adjust a bit to this new way that we're dancing in the family. Usually those changes will be positive. Every now and then we'll have things get worse before they get better. Or especially like if a parent hasn't been setting limits, has been real permissive, and all of a sudden they start setting limits, sometimes their kids will rebel and test before they come around and see they're going to be consistent. But generally speaking, it's a positive change. So actually what I have by the end of the book, and it is a book that you do want to read step by step, group by group, because I've already emphasized it's important to learn it in a certain order. When you get to the end, there's a worksheet called the decision-making worksheet, and you can take any situation. There's three questions that you ask that help you recognize what type of problem you're dealing with, and then depending on your answer to that, three very quick questions you can ask in a split second, depending on what you answer to that, what kind of problem it is, and there's only six types of problems that exist in the world. So you can have a gazillion different situations. You ask those three questions, and every situation will fit into one of six categories. So
that's astonishing.
It is.
How did you learn that?
It's not so much that I just saw the patterns. It's all based on each of the three questions is part of those foundational pioneer parenting programs I mentioned earlier in the interview. Each of the questions comes from a different resource, which is the advantage of me pulling them together, is that separately they were great. Together as part of a system, they're phenomenally amazing. So that you can ask these three questions, you break it down to six problems. All you got to know is how to solve is six problems, six different types of problems. Once you, that's kind of like imagine that you're coming down a freeway, and at the end of that freeway, you have six different turns that you can make, six different streets to go down. If you know which street you need to go down, it gets you on the right path. Once you're on the right path, you've got all kinds of choices for customizing this response to your individual family and your child and their age and your rules and all that. But it gets you on the right path to begin with. Because what too many people will do is they'll assume something or not know how to answer those questions, and they'll head down the completely wrong path, and it doesn't matter what they do once they're on that wrong path, or I should say that less effective path. I got to get fine there. I'm not supposed to say right and wrong. That's my own rule. There is no right and wrong parenting, but there's definitely less effective. If you get on a less effective path, it doesn't matter what you do, you're not going to get good results. Whereas if you can at least get on the right path, if you stay on that path, you can still do some trial and error with some of the individual tools that you pick, but you want to stay on that path because that's the most effective path for that kind of problem. So this decision-making worksheet walks you through the questions, and it actually helps you come up with what are you going to say, what are you going to do, and that takes you through listening, communication, behavior management, and discipline. It actually helps you come up with a 2-3 sentence response that covers your bases on all of those, how to prevent the problem, what you're going to say, and what you're going to do.
That's a neat little package.
It is,
really,
and
great.
It really is the only place you're going to get it.
Excellent.
You'll get pieces everywhere else. You can get pieces elsewhere, but nowhere else do you get it as a package. That's been proven effective. We've got over 15 years of outcome results with literally, we have documented 10 years with 2,000 parents, which is astonishing. You'll see scientific research programs in the newspaper that they determine some amazing thing. You know, I don't know, corn causes, you know, hair loss. And they'll do a study with 100 people and conclude this. We have 10 years with over 2,000 parents documented evidence that this program, that this system works. And now at this point, I've got 25 years. I've served over 5,000 parents. And so far, the system hasn't failed yet.
Excellent.
Wow. Congratulations.
You really, and I don't take, I won't really take, I'll take credit for pulling the system together. But it truly, I woke up at 3:00 in the morning one morning. It was way back when I was starting to see the patterns of this, and at 3:00 in the morning, which as far as I'm concerned is God time, and all of a sudden the house blueprint that I use, the steps, how it would be visually organized, all of it came to me. I went down to the computer, and in an hour, the universal blueprint was born, and it has not changed much since. So I have to say it came through me.
That's wonderful, and I'm eager to get started and wish I could stay. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Have a good weekend.
Thanks so much, Donna.
Bye-bye.
Okay, if you're just tuning in, this is Parents Tool Talk, hosted by Jody Johnston Powell. And what you're listening to is a re-airing of our pilot episode where Jody played the role of a guest. I'm Chris Gooley, her producer. I was the host. And we basically spent the hour getting to know Jody. The show is pre-recorded, so we're not taking live calls, but you are free to jump into the chat room or just sit back and enjoy the program. Just two brief notes. If you like what you hear today, then please rate our show here at Blog Talk Radio. We would really like to become a featured show. And if you can give us some good ratings, that'll help us out, and we really appreciate it. Second, if you'd like to be reminded of future shows and receive special bonus resources before and sometimes even after the show, then join our teleseminar mailing list. Just go to www.parentstoolshop.com, that's all one word, parentstoolshop.com/tele, T-E-L-E, and you can sign up for that. And finally, if you just want to learn more about the Universal Blueprint, about Jody, and about Parents Tool Shop, then visit us on the web at www.parentstoolshop.com. I'm going to air the final clip now. It's about 22 minutes long, and that will do it for this edition of Parents Tool Talk. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day. And let's see, we actually do have one other person who is called in live, and she has been waiting very patiently. So let me unmute her on my switchboard here. Is this Shayna?
Yes, it is.
Hi,
Shayna. Chris and Jody.
Hi, Shayna.
Hi. How are you guys? Oh, gosh, I've been enjoying listening to this. This is just so amazing.
And actually, let me ask Shayna a question, because Shayna has, let's see, when did you first find the book in a used bookstore? When was that? How long have you been involved with Parents Tool Shop?
I found the book a while back, about maybe 5 years ago, before I had Brady, actually.
Okay. And you got involved pretty much right away?
Okay. More actively involved with when I started to know you over the last couple of years, I guess.
Okay. And so I'll let Shayna tell you whether or not I'm lying about anything that has sounded like an outrageous claim. Am I lying about any of it?
No way. I could just take this book and clear the rest of my shelf. I mean, it's the one book that's the most effective for me, and there's two books that I would say changed my life, and one of them was The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and this was the other that completely changed the way that I think, changed the way, and that began changing the way that I act, and I'm just so grateful for it.
And that's why I do this, because to know, you know, I think every human being would like to know on the day that they die that they made a difference while they were here. And hearing from just one parent that's enough. Good enough for me. But to know that for literally thousands of parents, man, that is one of those emotional paychecks that no money could ever replace. No amount of fame, no amount of fortune compares to just being able to know that you really made a difference like that. And I appreciate also you mentioning the Seven Habits, because actually the author of that did endorse the Parents Tool Shop. It's only allowed to be printed inside the book. But I appreciate that because, yes, our philosophies are very similar. That book came out while I was writing Parents Tool Shop, and my students would come to me and say, did you read this book when you wrote it? I said, no, I didn't. You know, at that point, there comes a point when you're writing that you don't look at other things because then it has to become your own and you don't want to plagiarize or anything. And so I wasn't reading any other parenting books at that point. And all these people kept saying, oh, you got to read this book. It's exactly, you know, in line with what you're teaching. So I can see how those were two compatible resources for you.
Yeah, they're both aligned with the universal principles.
Yes.
You know, Jody, I have a copy of the book right in front of me. And you mentioned the author of The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Was that Stephen Covey?
Yes.
Can we read his endorsement on the show?
I'm not sure.
All right.
I'm not sure. It was the one endorsement that had very specifics. You can only use it on the inside of the book, and that's the only place you can use it. So I've never been able to use it on publicity. I'm really not sure if we can say it or not.
Okay. Well, then anybody who wants to know what Stephen Covey has to say about the book, run out to a bookstore or order online, and then you'll find out.
Yes, it's right on the inside. It's in the inside. In fact, it's the very first page, isn't it? It's the professional endorsements. Yeah, so it's right on the very first page, right inside the cover.
There are a couple of endorsements on the back of the book as well.
You know, I'm really honored by all the people who endorsed this book. Jack Canfield, author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and while most people know him for that name to fame, he also, however, his primary profession throughout his life, he was a teacher, and then he did self-esteem workshops and books. But, of course, we all know him because of his marketing expertise with Chicken Soup for the Soul. I went to one of his marketing programs, and he actually held up the Parents Tool Shop from the stage and said, this book, The Parents Tool Shop, is a prime example of what could be a best-selling series. And that's where I hope to go. I'm actually looking for an agent and publisher at this point to come up with a smaller version of Parents Tool Shop. Those of you who have seen the book, it does cover everything. There's nothing, no stone has been left unturned. It really is, a lot of people say it's their parenting Bible, and that is, or your encyclopedia or dictionary. It really is that, and that it really covers everything. But not everybody wants or has time to go through everything. So I've got a shorter version, and I self-published Parents Tool Shop just really for the purpose of me having one resource for all these workshops that I do. I do tots and tweens and teens and foster parents and professionals and psychologists and pediatricians, because they don't get this information in their professional college degrees and training, and so they have to go and get it elsewhere. It's not part of the college degree. They got to get it from people like me who teach the practical applications of all of those philosophies and theories that they've learned in college. And so I just wanted one you know, I didn't want to write 15 books. I just needed one resource that no matter where I was going, no matter who I was teaching, I have that resource that I could pull from. And that's really, you know, and people are like, oh, this is such a great book. Can I get a copy for my sister? And so I just started with self-publishing and have been doing that for the last, well, it's 2008, for the last 8 years. It went national. I published the first one in 92 as handouts. But then the first actual book that was bound was 97. That was just local. And then I went ahead and had that repackaged with the blue cover. The first one was a yellow cover with that little cartoon of my family that's on page one of chapter one. That used to be the book cover of the original book. And so I had it repackaged and went national with it in 2000, but still self-publishing.
Well, that would be the subject of a show in itself, wouldn't it, self-publishing?
Yes. Yes. In fact, Shana, who is now on our team at Parents Tool Shop and is assisting me with planning business expansion and project management to go from me being a one-woman business to building a team and helping to scale this up. We have instructors all over the world. And other than that, however, everything else has been pretty much me. And so actually, Shana and I just met with somebody yesterday, and I needed to do a little summary of my background, not only as a parenting expert, but from marketing. And it was the very fact of self-publishing my book and having to do all the marketing for that I learned a lot about marketing, to the point that now I'm considered the marketing expert within the parent education field and have been asked to write articles and chapters for textbooks. It's the first chapter in a family life education training textbook, first time I've ever had a chapter on marketing. And so they asked me to do that. So, yes, that's a whole nother interview is the business side of this.
Well, we are coming up at 43 minutes into the hour. This is 1 hour show. Jody, I have an idea. I didn't get a chance to run it by you before the show. Let me run it by you now, see what you think. I do have the recording of the short audio commercial that we put together for the bedtime hassles, helping parents overcome bedtime issues. And I was thinking it's about a minute, 45 seconds. We could all take a break, get some water, and we can go ahead and run this live. What do you think?
Let me put it in context before you run it.
Sure.
Because what I've said so far is that, and the way that I usually teach Parents Tool Shop is that I take parents through 15 different tool sets, which are 15 different skill groups that all parents need to parent effectively. And I organize those in a particular way and teach them how to use those and make choices from those tools in this systematic way of approaching parenting. So when you read the book, you're going through and learning skills. And I do practice exercises at the end of every chapter, you know, like how would you apply this group of skills to this situation. But what it doesn't have, unless you actually read the answer key to those, is what it doesn't have is, okay, so for bedtimes or for tantrums or for lying, what would you do in that situation? Because what that essentially does is it pulls from all the chapters and all those tool sets in that particular response formula, how would you handle that? So there's two things here. One is, you know, the Parents Tool Shop program itself teaches parents all the skills they need so that when they're faced with a problem like bedtime problems or tantrums, it empowers them to think for themselves, to figure out in this situation with this child, how do I want to respond because I know it's one of those six kinds of problems. Which of those six problems is it? The bedtime hassle teleseminar and our monthly teleseminars that we've been doing for the last year or so have been the best resource that we have for having a topic or issue-focused conversation or discussion or content information about, in this particular situation, how would we pull together, which techniques would we pick, and what kind of a problem is that? And so that's what we're starting to take those teleseminars now and share that information beyond just, you know, the people who have participated in them at the moment as an opportunity for people to see if they're dealing with a real problem situation and they need a quick fix now and they want answers to that problem and they don't want to have to read a whole book to get an answer and figure it out for themselves, we can say, okay, if you're having bedtime problems, here's what you can do. And in the process, they see how there's a system to this so that they see that right now we're talking about bedtime problems, but if I'm having tantrums or I'm having lying or sibling conflicts, I'm seeing that this is a system that I would be able to use for that also. So often, a lot of the times, parents will come to us initially on the web looking up some kind of a problem that they're having and looking for advice. And so they can come to us that way. And yes, we can give a quick fix. However, what we hope is that they'll recognize that rather than just keeping looking for quick fixes, if they make the investment of time,
it's the end of a long, busy day of parenting. Activities, chauffeuring, appointments, meals, laundry. You're ready to settle down, relax, and recharge. Maybe even spend some quiet moments with your family. Then you announce that it's bedtime.
I don't want to go to bed.
I don't want to go to bed.
You can't make me.
But I'm not tired.
I can't get sleep.
Mommy, I think there's monster inside.
I'm still not tired.
Will you stay with me?
Please, can I sleep with you?
I need a drink. I need a drink.
I gotta go potty again.
I wanna stay up later just like you. And go to bed when you do and brush my teeth when you do.
I don't wanna go to bed.
Oh, wow. Doesn't that sound familiar? If bedtime battles are wearing you down and draining your patience, you're not alone. Getting children to bed happily and cooperatively is one of the most common challenges parents face. Of course, getting them to stay there is the next. Hi, I'm Jody Johnston-Powell, author of the award-winning book, The Parents' Tool Shop. I invite you to listen in on an hour-long discussion I had with other parents just like you. In it, I offer practical step-by-step tips for preventing or solving the top 10 bedtime hassles parents commonly face. I'm here to support you and assure you that these solutions usually work quickly, effectively, and permanently. So spend 1 hour with me, and soon your bedtime experience will transform from stressed to blessed.
When he was on a walk with a friend in the woods. And that was the beginning of it at 9. And with that kind of trauma, you know, people look for anything they can to relieve the pain and the shame and the psychological trauma that that has. And that's really kind of that plus the combination of being in a rock band and an amazing guitar player in a rock band in the 60s. You know, you put all that kind of, you stir that all together and you get a nice recipe for getting involved with drugs on, you know, and maybe to an addictive level. But even then the professionals would say, instead of recognizing this as an addiction or recognizing the signs that today the professionals would have said something very different. It was, oh, don't you have anything better to do than try to, you know, bug him with his life, and he's a teenager, and, you know, don't worry about it, until it got to the point that it was really severe. I mean, he was becoming violent and very clearly dissociated with reality. And at that point, when he needed to be institutionalized, the diagnosis was schizophrenia, psychosis, and homicidal tendencies. And that's pretty scary to live with.
Oh, wow.
So, I think the misperception is, oh, well, you had all these great parents who were very skilled, and so, of course, you turned out okay. And that's part of why, and my brother allows me to share this story of our family, because it helps people realize that it is never too late, and you never should give up hope.
Boy, absolutely. That's just an incredible story. I actually wanted to ask also about your family, since you have two kids yourself, and now they're both grown up.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris, just jumping in for a second. We had a little bit of a minor technical issue earlier. Sorry about that. We had a little bit of a pause. Right now, I just wanted to clue you in because we jumped into the middle of conversation. Jody just finished talking about a story about her brother, and now we are moving into a conversation about Jody's kids. All right, so sorry for the technical snafu there, and now we're back to the show.
That's true.
And so a part of me wonders what it must have been like, because you hear parents often speak about how, yeah, their kids are smarter than they are. And here you were, a parenting educator. Did your kids ever pick up on the techniques you were teaching and try to use them themselves?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's a wonderful thing. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a language. And parents will notice this right away when they learn the skills. The language that you use with your kids, it's like anything else. Kids learn how to talk like you. So when you start using language that builds relationships and acknowledges their feelings or tells people what you want and what you need in an assertive way instead of being aggressive, they learn how to do that. And I was fortunate, having the parents that I did, that I was able to learn effective relationship language and effective behavior management language. I was able to learn all that as my first language, whereas most parents learn whatever they learn from the roasting pan approach that we talked about in the beginning, and then they have to change. And that's always more difficult than, of course, if you could have just had that right off the bat. However, that being said, it didn't mean that I was a perfect parent or that I never had challenges or that I always knew what to do. And because, keep in mind, too, at the point that I first had kids, I hadn't figured out the whole universal blueprint process. That took, you know, many years to figure that out to where I had a reliable system to fall back on. Until then, I was doing what most parents do, which is trial and error. It's just that I had all the good tools to pick from. My biggest challenge were personalities. My own personality challenges, because I was kind of more into like perfectionism and kind of power and control, not in a controlling way, but like in a perfectionist kind of way. And my son was also a bit headstrong, and that's not a good combination. So we right off the bat started getting into power struggles, and that was where the cooperation tool set and choices and some things like that, the approach there, it took about a year or so for us to kind of figure out how that works. And once we did, I never had another issue.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris one more time. Just wanted to let everybody know that unfortunately, because of that little bit of a delay, we're going to have to cut the pilot episode short by about a minute and a half or 2 minutes. Otherwise, Blog Talk Radio will cut us off automatically. So just to let you know, you'll start hearing the outro music a bit before the conversations actually stop. My apologies. We had a technical issue today. But hope you've enjoyed the show, and hope to see you next month on Parents Tool Talk. Thank you.
With that again. And I could have easily been butting heads with him for 18 years. In a heartbeat, I can see going down that path very easily. But we figured out how to reach win-win agreements so that I wasn't giving in, and he was also getting what he needed. And the other piece for me was around anger management. I was often the target of my brother's aggression, and so there was a lot of anger within me, and there were a lot of trigger buttons that I had of things that my brother would do to me that would kind of trigger my anger. Then if my kids did those things, I would be like an immediate 0 to 150 to get very angry. However, my parents, I never saw my parents get angry. I don't know if they didn't get angry, if they managed it all internally. I never saw them actually get angry and observe how to get through anger. And so that's one of the things that I mostly had to research, go out and learn, was how to manage my own anger so that I could, because any of these tools that you use, if you use them in anger, it turns them into weapons. So I had to deal with my anger first and not get hooked into things. So those were the two things. And were my kids perfect? No, they were normal kids who will test and try. And however, by using the effective responses, what we were able to avoid were long-term or repetitive problems that developed into more serious issues. Sure, my kids misbehaved. Sure, they tested. Sure, they did things imperfect. But generally speaking, for the most part, most of the time, I was able to use, you know, remember and use what I knew. And usually, it was, you know, dealing with something once or twice is about all we had to deal with, and that took care of it. The skills work.
Well, that's great. Shayna, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. I had to mute you for a second. I thought I heard a little a loud squeak, and I thought it might have come from your line, and I was afraid I'd lost you. So glad to see you're still with us. Do you have any questions you would like to ask Jody?
For once in my life, for the past 2 years, I can actually think of a question.
I'm shocked. Shayna always has questions. She always has a list of questions. That's so funny.
I know.
Oh, but what that tells me, though, is that because of all that you have, that you're figuring it out for yourself. And that is actually really telling for where she's gone from in the very beginning, of course, having to look to someone else for answers. But then the middle phase is she's learning the skills, and she thinks she knows, and she's figuring it out, and she's kind of doing that whole bounce off. Now, give me a reality check. Let me process through you. Am I on the right track? So she feels confident. And now I think she knows she's on the right track and doing good.
Yeah, we're just tweaking.
Yes.
Making things work.
Yeah. It's like any other learning process. Some of the language skills especially I think are kind of awkward at first, especially that don't say don't is a tricky one. It sounds real common sense, but it's actually very kind of awkward when you try to use the skill. And so there's a level of awkwardness when you're using a new skill until you practice it often enough that it starts to become a part of your normal routine and your normal way of speaking. And then you just do it without even thinking.
Yes. And for me, the identity piece has been a struggle for me too, because I come from a very power control stance, I think, and I don't know, just the way I see myself and the way it doesn't feel right to use that language with my kids. It feels awkward and it feels uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And that really gets back to where we really start with parents, and we'll kind of bring it full circle here at the end. Where we actually start is where Shane is kind of talking about ending up, is that the very first thing we look at is what is our parenting style. And these are like the beliefs that get passed down through that roasting pan approach of here's what we believe parents should do. We think a parent's job should be this. And it's those beliefs that we actually have parents list. What are your goals as parents? And then we help them look at five different approaches, five different parenting styles, and have them conclude which of those styles do they think is really going to help them reach their goals the best. And the amazing thing, I told you, 25 years, over 5,000 parents, every single workshop, almost every single workshop, I do this.